saving money on all your electrical needs at Menards. From wire, tools, testers, and more, Southwire is the perfect choice for your next electrical project. They offer innovative products to help you get your project done right. Hurry in today and save big on all Southwire products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, a very teary and emotional Jesse Millington, and we're back to review the eighth race of the Formula One 2024 season, the Monaco Grand Prix. And to do this, I'm joined by Timo Albers-Daly and Ellie Mae Taylor. She's back. How are you both?
Did you miss me?
A little bit.
I mean, if you listened to our Monaco review, which, let's face it, you probably didn't, you would have seen that we definitely didn't go off on any tangents whatsoever, and we kept it clean, proper, straight to the point, and didn't do at least any silliness whatsoever. So I'd say we somehow managed to struggle through.
No discussions at all about cows milking themselves over rookies in IndyCar. Nothing like that at all.
I don't even know where you're getting these ideas from, Jesse.
Crazy ideas that are completely unfounded, have never been said on this podcast before. Anyway, we'll jump into the crux of the matter, which is, of course, the Monaco Grand Prix. And, well, it's finally happened. Charles has broken Max's qualifying streak and also has broken the 93-year dry streak of a Monegasque failing to win their home race. What
admittedly,
a fantastic
that has
sight.
Been kind of it's impressive, but also there's only been two of them.
Yeah,
it's competing. So
it's
impressive,
stat.
But it's still if there was one every season, that would be even more impressive. But when there is a 93 gap, because that's just when the last one was there, it takes a little bit away, but it's still good.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's a fun statistic, but also Max breaking Charles breaking Max's qualifying streak as well was quite interesting to see. It's sort of one
kind of
the key
of all the people
that's...
to do it. If like normally, I'm not going to expect to win this race. That'll be you, but I'm having qualifying. We're not doing that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to see. And of course, we jump into the Grand Prix itself, which opened up with a huge pileup on Beau Rivage as Perez basically goes to block Magnussen and instead pit maneuvers himself into the wall, wiping out the Dane and then bouncing back onto the track in the way of Hülkenberg, wiping him out.
Interesting interpretation
rear.
Of that, but yeah, we can get that later.
That's my interpretation of it, because we'll get to that later, I think. Sainz parked up outside the casino after blowing a tyre, contracting with Piastri into Sandovot, and then Ocon launched what can only really be described as a bit of a wild one on his teammate into Portier.
No, go on, read your note. You've written what there?
I've written terrorist attack there, but I've been thinking about this a bit more. We'll get to that when we talk about Alpine later on in the race review. Ultimately, this buckled Ocon's car, and turns out they don't have a spare chassis, so they're having to scramble to get one together for Canada. Meanwhile, we've been bullying Williams for not having a spare chassis all the time. Alpine have been sitting there going, please only pay
please
attention to
it.
The fact
please
that our car is very, very fat indeed. So we have no spare chassis. Ocon launched himself into Pierre, buckled his car, retired from the race, and then earned himself a 5-place grid penalty for Canada in the meantime. Race restarts went wide without a hitch, and most of the team swapped their cars to hards, apart from George Russell, who made a fantastic run the entire race on a set of mediums. They must have been fit to burst by the end. And from
wasn't
there,
like
I say,
he was going fast, though, was it?
He wasn't really chewing through them. No, he and Max did have a fun discussion afterwards. I don't know if anyone saw this from the media pen, where the two of them were joking about ways of spicing it up, like getting out and having to do one lap on foot, or sort of 5 mandatory pit stops, or bringing back refueling. So loads of different concepts bantered between Max, your staff,
or just tell Ocon that you're his teammate now and just see what happens.
Yeah, build Ocon's car out of stainless steel and just sort of let him at it. We'll wait and see on that front. Anyway.
Was it Monaco or was it a different race where when you were allowed a spare chassis and so many people crashed and you had that huge run to the pits?
It was Spa. 90.
I just assumed it was 97
where everyone was running back to the pits for a spare chassis. There used to be a time where you just have a spare car that you could go and get into, but that was sort of ruled out because it just meant that things wouldn't really change. Simply, you could be David Coulthard, wipe out half the field in Spa, and then go and get in the second car, and then wipe out Michael Schumacher later on.
Uninspired strategy for racing, though.
It's a bold call.
The things you do to get Jordan on their way.
Yeah, it was strange. But anyway, race goes by. It was a bit... There wasn't a lot of action.
We'll get to this later.
Yeah.
It
was an interesting race to watch as a very slow burn. I think as a Ferrari fan and a Charles Leclerc fan, it was a very, very nervous 70 laps. Basically sat there watching through gritted teeth and gaps in my fingers. But there was some interesting moments, including 5 overtakes on track, which happened, surprisingly. But more so, there were also 7 camera cutaways to the girlfriends of Sainz and Leclerc as well.
Not that you were counting.
I wasn't counting. I saw the stat on Twitter later. It was quite an interesting comparison. There was also a period where we had dad cam as well. We had both Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris's dads in like the timing tower mini cams, which was, I guess, because there was nothing else happening on circuit. But overall, Charles Leclerc comes home. He wins his home Grand Prix in front of a huge crowd, boat horns going off, the grandstands filled with raptures, flags flying from every balcony. It was incredible, and also means we now had 4 different winners in the first 8 races, which isn't too bad considering the sort of modern years of the sports we've seen, and equally 3 different winners three winners from different teams doing it too. So we've had a bit more.
I still feel like that's the bare minimum that we should be expecting from this era, but I'm not going to rehash that conversation right now, and kind of feels like, yeah, I'll take the silver lining, but
it's no 2012. Fair enough. Yeah. It's
no. I'm going again just for the sake of this era of everything's going to be so close, this is the best we can do.
We can do is every other white race statistically, someone not Max Verstappen will win it, which is
maybe.
But it's also the fact that we've had 2 Ferrari drivers win before 2 Red Bull.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Certainly if you're Sergio Perez trying to get a contract extension. But we'll get to him in due course, and more accurately, we'll get to Red Bull next as we sort of dive into picking apart how the teams and drivers performed across the weekend. And this was a bit of a joker race for Red Bull, really. The car is too low and too stiff to be any good around here. This has long been very much the setup for an Adrian Newey car, is to maximise the downforce by running a very stiff, very low to the ground car. And that really sort of didn't work for Perez. It sort of ballsed him up a bit, and he wasn't able to get a good qualifying. He was out-qualified by both Haases and the Williams of Logan Sargeant, crucially, both Williams really. And then obviously, as you see him turn through the right of Sandoval on the run up the hill, he's obviously gotten past both the Haases but hasn't got the drive out of Sandoval. You see him check right, you see him look right, and you see him steer right into Kevin Magnussen. I'm sorry, if it wasn't lap one, that for me is a bit of a racing incident, is a bit more than a racing incident. That's a 3-place penalty, I think, because Magnussen by that point had a front axle ahead of him. There was the space. Admittedly, you don't have the line for very long. You've got another 200 meters till you lose the line, though. So for me, that was on Perez. I think he was a bit scrappy coming off the line and backfired for him.
Well, he did.
You want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, he did move a bit to the left, and then I think it's one of those things that Perez assumed, well, there isn't any space for Magnussen to particularly go. 2 of us aren't going to fit the rest of going up here any further. Magnussen is going to back out, whilst Magnussen thought, well, Perez is going to give me enough room so that we don't crash. I think the chances of Magnussen being able to overtake there are slim. So I think Magnussen should have backed out. And I think it's just really unfortunate then that Hülkenberg got caught up in it and it wasn't his fault at all.
Yeah, because there's the whole argument, obviously, of if you don't go for a gap and all the rest of it, but
That's a ridiculous phrase. Senna actually refuted that a few years later afterwards. He said it's actually quite ridiculous because it means you'll likely never actually make it to the end of a Grand Prix because you'll keep crashing if you go for every gap that appears. But everyone likes, to tout it.
Backing up my point of Magnussen here, because if he hadn't gone for that gap and listened to what Senna said a few years later, he would have still been in the race. And after what was already a difficult weekend for them because they got disqualified from qualifying, the last thing you want to do then is compromise your race. And then mess up your teammates' race as a result of that. Tolk was so close to being safe there. And yeah, I know you've got to race whoever's in front of you, but also be a little bit realistic. You're still in a Haas. It's a better Haas, but you're against a Red Bull, regardless of where you are. That's not going to work. And if you're going to overtake someone, maybe don't do it there. You saw some overtakes just before the hairpin bend. Maybe try there. Maybe try it after the tunnel. Maybe wait until the end of the first lap and do it down the start finish straight. Much better places to do it than right there where it's just a bit too finicky, especially on lap one. And yeah, no, it's just seemed a bit, I mean, I can still blame Perez a little bit for it, but that's more on K-Mag for me. And I just find it amusing that while the car for Red Bull just was on them for a second, that the car didn't suit them, but still the sheer difference in qualifying between Max and Checo was ridiculous.
This is something and that you have
always that's not then. Something that yeah. you want to be doing when you're give me a 2-year contract. No. How yeah. about 6 months?
This is something you and I said after, was it Imola we said that the car not being as perfect as we want is the fact that it's now showing up the difference in driver ability between Max and Checo. And this is sort of tantamount to that cause. But yeah, I think as much as I sort of, for me, from what I've seen, from what I've looked at, want to sort of lay a bit of the culpability for this on Perez. At the end of the day, for both Perez and Magnussen, you've got to remember that you can't win a race on lap one, turn one, but you sure as hell can lose a race on lap one, turn one.
And for the fact that both drivers, the amount of sheer experience that they have, and at Monaco, neither one of them should have been putting themselves in either position there, and poor Hulk is the one that suffers as a result, which I feel most sorry for, because I had him on Fantasy F1 team.
I suffered really badly with that as well. And Magnussen is on 10 penalty points.
Lucky that that got put as a racing incident, because he would have been gone.
Yeah, he wouldn't be the only driver sitting out Canada, potentially, maybe. But we'll get to that in due course. On the last point on the Red Bull is I have sent my sister out. She's going on her evening run tonight, and she said she's going to try and retrace the track and see if she can find any bits of Red Bull or Haas for me. So I might be getting a memento from the Grand Prix. She's going to have a run up Avenue d'Ostend, better known as Beauvage. I've even got it written on the notes. I couldn't see it for a second there. But yeah, we'll see what happens. Anyway, Red Bull.
What I will just say as well, I think, I can't remember whether it was Jensen Button who said it or not, but the gap between Perez and Verstappen in qualifying has been it was a similar gap to how it has been throughout the year. But the fact that all the other drivers are getting
into that gap,
it's becoming more painful.
And more of an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Previously, when both drivers were able to have that same gap, but they were sort of half a second clear of the field, fine. Now the rest of the field is not only closed up to them, but is now fighting within that gap. It's a bit of a problem. I think going out of Q1, the gap between sort of P1 and P16 or something was an absurdly close.
This was the best qualifying we've had all year, and for quite possibly since Monaco last year, arguably, but it was just they all went for it for the whole time allotted to them for all three sessions, and it's like, oh, this is nice. You don't get this very often. They kind of, they go out, they come back in, we wait for 10 minutes, and then they go back at it. Oh, we're all going full beans the whole time.
Great. Monaco demands that of you as a qualifying circuit. And of course, the team that got it very right when it comes to qualifying were, of course, actually, I've just got a message from my sister saying no Red Bull found, sorry. Damn. Was, of course, Ferrari, though. And my notes simply start off with the phrase, fucking finally. This car really isn't the quickest, but the team pulled off a blinder there, coaching both drivers through, watching the gaps, talking, listening. Like, proper organisation as a team, making it work. Science did pretty well there, pulling it back together and getting a good measure on Piastri through the second sort of attempt at it. Really got his head back in the game with it. And all round, it was just a solid team performance. I'll certainly get on to Leclerc's performance towards the end, but I think for Ferrari and for Science, this is a great weekend to look back on and go, wow, we were able to put it together and pull it off. And I think this is going to go down in sort of Fred Vasseur's checkbook as one of the weekends that proves exactly what he's done with this team and how he's rebuilt it into a fully functioning unit that can work efficiently, listen to the drivers, give them useful feedback, and build a plan as a race goes on, as well as going into a race with an idea. This was what we want to see from Ferrari, and ultimately it came out on top if you're a fan of CL16.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably the natural point I can talk about this out of all the teams, because I was having a chat with Jacob about this post-race, and it was this weird thing. If you showed me this race on paper, I would think, oh, this was an incredibly dull race. And lots of people watching it would have said, this is an incredibly dull race. But for some reason, I absolutely fucking loved it. And it was one of the best Grand Prix I think I've seen definitely in this era. And I think it was just the fact that Ferrari got their shit together. Nice. And they kept it together, even rarer, especially these days, especially with Charles at home. You say earlier about the 93 years since the last one and how much bad luck Leclerc has had over the years at this venue. The fact that he made it past turn one, the fact he made it to the grid after he got pole was just a bloody miracle in the first place, considering past performances. And the tension built over the entire Grand Prix of can Ferrari and him not get some bad luck or mess this up themselves or something, because you know that if even the tiny mistake, Piastri signs there right there, waiting for it, and Norris is a little bit about, but he will come in and he's not too far away either. And you know that if any of those four mess up, George, Max, and Lewis aren't too far behind in the grand scheme of things either. So there's all this potential jeopardy and just kind of builds that tension up and up the whole time. And I think this is something that people often forget, especially the newer fans to F1, of F1 at Monaco is not driver be driving really. It's the drivers versus the track. It's the most endurance race that there is for this. And it's what all the other street tracks try and emulate but fail to do in quite the same way. Mm-hmm. There's some that do it differently, but they don't quite manage to do it the same with Monaco, because Monaco is Monaco. I think that whole combination, along with the close battle behind them, I mean, you saw like Alonso and Ricciardo so close the whole time, can't do anything, and you don't want to risk it just in case. You need to be so certain. And that's why Sainz gets really close to Piastri, then he pulls back a bit, like, nope, can't do it yet. Gotta wait, gotta try again, just gotta try and see everything. Is it worth the risk? And that's why it works so perfectly in Monaco. I think last year's race, yeah, was better, but you had the wetness and you had the unpredictability there. Whereas if this is a dry race, this is the best example of it you can get. But if Leclerc's on pole next year, it's not going to be the same, because he's already broken it now. Mm-hmm. So it would potentially be a boring race next year. Or if you put this race on a different track, I might not be interested. But something about all of this together just somehow worked. And Ferrari being the team to pull it off with their driver from Monaco, with their adoptive brother in second place, that's all you really want for it, really. And I just came away going, I don't give a shit about what the rest of you all think on this one. I don't care that the top 10 all stayed exactly where they qualified. That was excellent.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that it's driver versus circuit, because we then went and saw pretty much the same thing with the Indy 500. You
in know a way, yeah.
The way that Pato O'Ward spoke about it, he said this wasn't a race against the other guys on the circuit, as gutted as he was to lose to Joseph Newgarden, first guy to do sort of
so many people finished
0-1-0-2.
Didn't finish, yeah. Rather, and that's how I think that.
It's you against the race, it's you against the circuit and the Brickyard. It's great that those two fall on the same weekend, because they are very similar when it comes to the sort of the mythos of the race and the way that people view the race in the circuit. And yeah,
well, it's the triple crown for a reason, and it's the closest to endurance that those categories have.
Yeah, and yeah, when it comes to handling the pressure of a guy behind you is a huge part to both of them as well. Weirdly, is sort of leading the dragon round the brick bowl or leading the guys round Monaco. Like you said, it's a question of, You're not waiting for a chance to overtake the guy in front. You're waiting for the guy in front to make that mistake, and you keep putting the pressure on. And we'll get to how I feel about that when we come to McLaren as well, because I think they did excellently at it. Ellie May, your words on Ferrari?
Not so much Ferrari, but more that I think Monaco has brought, I guess, I can't think of a better word, but I guess hope for the whole of the season, because now the gaps are closing. It doesn't quite look so much like Max Verstappen's gonna, or Red Bull are gonna run away with the season at the minute. We are now we've got a bit more hope.
It's that classic Ferrari hope of don't do that for me. Don't do it yet.
Yeah, I mean, the closeness is incredible. We're now down to Ferrari are just 24 points off the back of Red Bull in the standings. And given the split in performance we're seeing from the Red Bull drivers at the moment, that is quite remarkable.
That's probably the thing that we can get more interested in rather than the drivers thing, because while Leclerc is closer and Perez is way down, you know that Max only needs to have a couple of good races and everyone else needs to do what they normally do. And you're like, oh, dear, never mind. But the constructors, however, that is where it could be interesting, because as a driver lineup, weirdly, they have the weakest thing. We've been over this before. It's kind of like Ferrari, Mercedes and McLaren definitely don't have the best car, but they have stronger drivers and more consistency. When you look at Ferrari in particular with Charles and Carlos, with the exception of not even Saudi, because Berman did brilliantly there. They've all been inside the top 10 and failing at the top 5. So every single race. So
yeah, I mean, races that both Charles and Carlos have entered and started, they've both finished within the top 5, I think. Points wise, Leclerc is only 31 points off the back of Verstappen. We're going to Canada, which is by all accounts a street circuit. Really, it is tight. It is bumpy. It might not work to the Red Bull's advantage. Certainly, if you're Perez, problems. You're going to fall down the order again. And again, we'll see the constructors close up.
I thought that was just a lovely thing just to round off Ferrari and Red Bull there when Perez was walking back to the paddock. It's very reminiscent of Canada last year with, oh, we've got some new memes we can make now of he's on his long walk back. And like, I've seen this one before.
Yes, yeah, we've seen this one before. So we'll move on from Ferrari to Mercedes, who I really feel like we ought to start bumping further down the order when we do these, because they really aren't sort of in the top three when it comes to teams to review. But for me, it was a bit of a lackluster weekend for them. I think the circuit masked a lot of their overall problems. I've already mentioned it was quite good seeing George do pretty much the entire race on one set of mediums, proving that, yeah, even if you're not pushing a lot, you can really take a fair bit out of those tyres and make it work. And he was hounding Verstappen for a lot of the way around. It wasn't like he was sitting on his haunches, but otherwise a bit... for me from Mercedes.
I disagree here. I think that they had more potential here and practice kind of proved that, and it was just unfortunate that it couldn't carry over to qualifying and they couldn't capitalize on any chaos that may have happened out front, because it just didn't happen. I mean, they were there, but you're limited by Monaco there. And yeah, I think that I don't know when the next viable opportunity for them would be, because I don't want to say Singapore, because that's kind of the next kind of narrow thing that we've got, because that's still too far away. But I think It's a weird one, but I don't think it's as bad as it seems. And if anything, it's just more of the same. But I think we were just hoping for more because of how good Lewis in particular was in practice, that then when they qualified a bit further down, like, oh, damn. And we've done it a couple of times this season so far. And it's this kind of, I don't think it's any better, but I don't think it's any worse than what it has been. It's just still...
We keep seeing that, though, don't we? They don't do too bad
in practice.
And then you think, oh, are they sort of coming back? Have they sort of learnt what they need to learn about this car? And then it gets the qualifying and the race, and you're like, oh, what happened?
This was what I was going to say. In practice trims, they seem to be able to sort of have a really good handle on the car. But as soon as you fuel it up to do a qualifying, to do a race, the balance of the car just goes away, and it's something they don't seem to be able to understand.
I find it curious, as if they seem to nail it, first of all, just leave it as it is in practice for a weekend, just choose a Grand Prix and just go, you know what, whatever we do in practice, we won't make any changes, because if we do well, then just leave it. And I feel like they might be doing these little tweaks for it for qualifying.
No, they need to do it the other way around. They need to start setting the car up for the Grand Prix in practice. They need to stop doing this sort of weird practice testing setup. They need to basically set it up for what they want in the Grand Prix and run that through practice, even if that means setting it up going into FP1 and you run that same setup through FP1 and FP2, so you've got two sets of consecutive data, because that will be far more realistic.
They're not going to do anything much at the moment anyway. Do one in Canada, do the other one in Spain, learn as much as you can and see if you can win Silverstone.
Almost like it likes a green track. And then when all the other cars sort of...
I don't want to share.
...up to speed, they then sort of plateau.
The circuit gets rubbered in, they lose their pace, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I can't quite think what would cause it to happen, but...
That would explain Kimi Antonelli in testing, right? Does very well by himself and then put him in a race and he's a bit further down the order.
Yeah, perhaps it's just a Mercedes thing. Anyway, we'll move on from a relatively flat... Mercedes to McLaren. And team, I'll let you start with your points on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I was so torn for this Grand Prix, because obviously you want Charles to win his home race after so long, but also Piastri really deserves that win. And he's been kind of put on the back foot, it feels like, the last few races in particular. He's kind of, no, you're not going to get the upgrades first, Lando is, and then Imola is again close, but no cigar. And then this time it felt like the best opportunity, and what a way that would be for him to win his first Grand Prix in Monaco. It'd be so Oscar Piastri. But despite that second place, he seemed very happy with it. And he was playing the pressure on the majority of the race. And that was awesome to see, keeping Sainz behind. I mean, that's a driver with a vast amount of experience who wants that second place. He wants to keep proving himself to other teams so that he can try and negotiate whatever the hell he can with whoever he can. And Piastri was there going, no, I'm keeping this and I'm not going to buckle under your pressure. And that win is coming. We keep saying that, I know, but it feels like we're not going to have a Lando Norris situation with him where we have to wait 67 years for it. It's coming, and I think it's coming this season. And the fact that you get second place in Monaco in your second season, not too shabby.
Yeah, I reckon it will have happened by or at Singapore at the very latest for Piastri. It's definitely coming in the sort of first two-thirds of this year's season. And the way that, on a team aspect, the fact that they could really chase down the top set at the moment is quite exciting when it comes to constructors, as we've already mentioned. And it was a really solid performance from them as a unit, the way that Andrea Stella is able to sort of muster the troops, drive them forwards, bring them together and operate, as we've seen with Ferrari this weekend, as a sort of unflappable unit, is really what you want to see when you sort of look at this as a team sport. Then you look at the individual drivers. It was an excellent drive from Piastri, being a fly in the ointment all race long for Ferrari. They would have loved to have come home with a 1-2. They'd have been trying to find ways past it, but he was able to either back off and push Sainz back a little bit into Norris, or race up and put pressure onto Leclerc as he wished throughout that entire race. It was very much his race for the winning, and almost a race he sort of conducted the pace of, depending on whether he was pushing or trying to sort of push someone backwards. It was a really, really interesting drive from Piastri. Norris sort of almost vanished into the background a bit with it. You can't forget he came P4 in this and held a really good position, and again proved to be an annoying marker that filled in a gap that Ferrari could have, if they needed to, pitted into. He was a problem, and that when you're doing a team sport like this, when you're looking at what the other drivers are doing, he played the perfect game this weekend, and I think deserves some commendation for it.
I do think it was perfectly hilarious, though, that he did the typical racing driver thing after the race, though, of saying, I don't think Carlos should have been allowed to rejoin the race. Like, oh, is that because he was in third by any chance?
And yeah,
you would have step ahead of you. If he was in fifth, would you mind, or is that not important?
Sour grapes.
Shall we put or predict which race Oscar Piastri is going to win then? This year.
I think I said Silverstone the other day, because it'd be funny if he beat Lando too. If Lando came second in Silverstone, trying to win his home race, and Oscar just goes, nah, mate, take a nap.
I'm going to go Austria.
What have we got left?
Oh, another. I think we talked about that as well, because there's another strong Norris.
It's a strong circuit. Norris circuit. Austria, Spain, Canada, Spain, Austria, Silverstone, Hungary.
I'll take all of them.
Ooh.
Just because it'd be hilarious.
It's the Austrian combination.
I want to see it at Hungary, mostly because I'm there. But I have a feeling.
I hope they all DNF into turn one again.
I think Belgium, possibly. Spa. What a circuit to take your first win at, for one. Charles Leclerc did it there in 2019.
Nah, Gasly's winning Spa.
You reckon?
That's going to be my wild prediction.
Well, he might not have a teammate to compete against, so he's sort of got a bit of space next to him. But no, for me, Belgium, I think, could be. I think I'm going to put that down if that's what we're going to call now.
Are you saying Austria then?
I'm saying Austria.
Okay.
Well, let me just find a space on one of the predictions ones. So, Piastri circuit win. So, I'm going for Spa. Ellie May, you're going for Austria. And Timo, you're going for Silverstone, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, okay. We'll see what happens with that one. Have we discussed McLaren enough? Do we want to move on to Aston Martin?
Yeah, why not? I mean,
it's not going to take long.
This was essentially Alonso being a brilliant teammate. He played the team game beautifully for Stroll, considering he qualified quite far down the order. And then as soon as Stroll could capitalise on this excellent opportunity that he'd been given, he just absolutely wasted it. And that was about it for the story. And Stroll did get some overtakes, some of the five, but, you know, didn't really do much of anything. So that was, that was Aston Martin this weekend. It's a real shame.
Yeah, they were, I mean, my note is, I suppose they were there. I don't know where the pace has gone in that car. I don't know where the pace has gone from Fernando Alonso as well. Lance looked like he was having an interesting race, really duking it away with some of the other drivers around him, then picked up a puncture.
Driver said he should have easily been able to get past considering, yeah.
Yeah, who was listening to the F1 TV feed for this one? Because there was a great moment on the commentary where they are stifling laughter at Stroll limping into the pits with one tyre coming off, because who else is it going to be? It's Lance Stroll. I think that sort of tells you the general consensus of how F1 and F1 fans are feeling about him at the moment. And it's a tide that's shifting.
What do you mean at the moment? We felt that way for the last 151 Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
What was interesting was Minardi, though, because there was definitely... It was just tales of two halves there in some respects, in that Yuki showed once again the importance of qualifying, and that kind of interested, he's going to do bad at some point this year, just law of averages. And I'm going to be intrigued, and not through like a DNF or anything, like just he's going to be off the pace somewhere. It's going to happen. Just again, law of averages. I'm going to be intrigued where it is though, because he does seem to be really dialed into that car. And I think he's in this really weird position of, is he auditioning to try and replace Perez, as that's the obvious way for him to go, or does he know that regardless of what he does, Red Bull will do whatever the hell Red Bull want to do? If it's not Ricardo Belchudo, he's just looking to see, does anyone else want me, just on the off chance? And he's doing a really nice job there. And on the Ricardo side, it was just, again, you saying that in qualifying, such slim margins in Q1 between everyone, and same in Q2. It was really unfortunate, because you've got these massive cars again. Everyone's debating, like, oh, what do we do? You make them smaller. It's not really difficult. You look at the size of these things compared to what they had in like 2006 or 2007. It's mental, the difference. You just make them smaller because then you get the more overtaking. Fine. And it showed here, because Ricardo so close to Alonso the entire second half of that race, it felt like. And you're like, oh, he's getting to like 1/10 away and just can't manage it. And we know that these are drivers that would happily duke it out if they could, and there'd be so much back and forth, and it'd be a really nice battle there, and then get up the road, because we know Ricardo can do it, and we know Alonso would happily be doing that. Just can't do it in Monaco and just have it set off that. And I think it's one of those results again where on paper it doesn't tell the whole story, but Yuki just managed to do a nice thing of, he's only really got Williams behind Albon to threaten him. That was never really going to happen. He was able to just survive the endurance course, get a couple of points, job done. He's ticked that box. What else do I have to do to prove myself to you? Oh, I'm not one of these other drivers that you've just decided is better for whatever reason. And it might not even be anyone we're thinking of.
The Yuki argument is interesting, because I've been flicking through the news from a variety of European mags, and what's coming out of Germany, Austria reporting-wise is interesting, because they suggest that Yuki is being lined up to replace Checo. It's apparently that is on the cards. Helmut Marko has said the performances Yuki has been putting out this season have been incredibly consistent. He has been performing at the limit of the car. He's not been over pushing it. He's been doing exactly what we want to see from a Red Bull second driver. So he's done everything that they need him to do to prove he can just sort of go off, run number two to Verstappen, be quick, be furious, be right behind him. So I think Yuki has done exactly what he needs to. He's cooking right now when it comes to sort of points, scoring, showing up the rest of the field behind him. Because he just looks, I wouldn't say untouchable, but he's just dialed into it. He's focused. And it's really nice to sort of see that step up again from him as a driver. We saw a bit of that step up last year. This year we've seen him do that again. And I like that development. That fact that he is constantly pushing and evolving himself professionally is a really good thing. And I think certainly Red Bull might now be paying attention to that.
But why was he over a lap, one lap behind Hamilton ahead? I don't think I've ever seen it. So
that was quite hilarious, I've got to say, because I know he got lapped, and then Hamilton went into the pits, came out 45 seconds ahead of you. He was like, how the fuck did he manage to do that?
He got lapped twice. Mm. And I'm like, but I don't know how or why. I don't think, I don't think I've
Leclerc
ever
was seen speed.
Him be like, I don't know how to phrase it. I don't know.
You're just
like,
broken.
Sometimes you see in like the timing stands, like some of the drivers right at the bottom are like plus one lap.
Oh yeah, he was the only one with plus one lap, and then it was times for everyone else below, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's like, but that he's in what, eighth? When yes. has someone been that high up in the order and they've been a lap behind? I don't know the last time.
It's been a while, I think.
Yeah, I don't know why he was so far behind. I don't understand. No one was sort of giving me an answer.
Yeah, I think he was just holding up the train. He knew that unless it was blue flags, no one's going past him. So there's no point in pushing, running that fast, trying to make those risks, trying to make those problems happen.
Again, it was that sort of thing of no one's pitting again unless they absolutely have to. You just want to make your tyres last, I guess.
Yeah, it's just not taking the risks. I don't know how he'd call it out to be that huge. That does still baffle me, but I don't know. It worked for him. I can't complain if it worked. The same could really be said for Williams, who sort of, like you said, fell back into that weird slow group. Can't complain if it works. They got a point. They got points out of this, and yeah, it wasn't a bad weekend for them overall, I don't think.
No, it's nice to see a couple of smart and sneaky moves from Sargeant towards the end. I mean, you wrote in the one I was thinking of there, Jesse, about when Norris was getting past Joe because he was lapping him, and Sargeant, I'll have some of that, please, and just.
Popped it out, followed Norris through under the blue flags, and it there is a good racing driver in there. He struggles with the chassis. It's such a bit of a pig of a car. I think the experience of Albon shows because he can manhandle the car a bit better. But yeah, he's coming along. He's getting there. I think we're going to see Loinz later this year again. I think it's going to happen this year. It'd be nice if he gets Loinz at home, but. For now, I think Loinz are on the cards this year once more. So it'd be great. And yeah, overall, I think decent weekend for Williams. You didn't look the worst team out there. So well done. We're making steps, boys. We're making steps.
Yeah. It's like they looked racy in a non-racy
race. Yeah. It was a strange one for them.
Unlike steak.
Did you just copy your notes over from the last week? Because it looks like it just says the same thing, which is they also competed in this.
I mean, at this point, what else am I supposed to say about?
Bottas made an on-track overtake.
Yes,
that's well done. A Grand Prix winner he overtook someone. Fuck me. How did that happen? Get over it. He's in a car that's terrible. The team's given up and don't seem to be doing anything until at least next year at the absolute earliest. And Bottas is just making up the numbers.
It does feel
and a bit so
like
Joe.
That. He does feel a bit like that, to be fair. Certainly coming out of this weekend, there was nothing really in qualifying. There was nothing really
they've got
in
a pretty, this session. I said about them last week, they've got a pretty livery. I like seeing it. I still do. That's all they've got going for.
We got a really good angle of it in the F2, where Maloney's car sort of tipped up to almost sort of nose-diving into the ground off the back of Dirk's. And you saw
Ocon was taking notes. They're like, oh, I'm going to do that later.
Yeah, show off the livery at a different angle. Make sure the sponsors that are on top of it get seen. And yeah, great for them.
Bottas's overtake provided us with some entertainment.
Well, I was entertained fully because I already love this Grand Prix for reasons I've already stated, yeah, so I didn't need that.
It feels like we're fishing for things to say about steak, so we'll move on to Haas, where we're going to be fishing even harder. We're going to be fishing even harder for things to say.
I'll tell you what I did see earlier. They posted a picture on Instagram with the caption for Monaco. They're inside the tunnel of a unique experience or something along these lines, and the first comment was, do you even make it to the tunnel? I was just kind of, that was about it.
Not in the Grand Prix.
And you could just hear Henry just crying somewhere from the distance. Yeah,
I feel bad for him because he went along to the Matt and Tommy P1 live event. Was it Birmingham's F1 arcade?
Yeah.
Obviously,
oh, that's unfortunate.
It was hosted by MoneyGram, so it was sort of a Haas event. Everyone's wearing Haas t-shirts and they get wiped out coming out of Sandevot. And you're like, well, that must be the deadest event on Earth today. Tough. I do have something to say actually about Alpine because they're our next team. So I'll move on to them. We can have a proper argument. Timo, I'll let you open up and I've got a retort for you.
Well, I saw your retort and I challenge it immediately with I'm not on about whenever he's fighting other people because that's a whole different thing. when he fights his own teammates, he's got a solid history of just, nah, fuck you. And that seems to be his policy. And we've seen it from the start of his career until now. And he doesn't seem to understand that you're not meant to combine, don't hit your teammate with beat your teammate. It's just kind of always hit your teammate. That seems to be his thing. And other drivers, yeah, fair enough. I see the examples you've put here. It's all very nice and pretty and laid out very nicely. And I'm sure there's a nice spreadsheet and a graph to go with it. But I don't really care about those ones because that's other drivers that aren't his teammate. And that's fair enough. But at the place where Gasly qualified, I'm pretty sure ahead of him. Mm-hmm. Yes, it may have been an opportunity to score points, but with the team perspective, you've got a dog shit car. You actually have a driver solidly doing all right in the points because of qualifying. You just need to stay there. And instead, we're going to try and overtake you at a point, which again, I know is Monaco, and you've got to try what you can, but there's some places you just don't try and do it. And that was one of them. Need I remind you, what was it last year when, or the year before when Perez and Sainz and the rest of them all went in there? How many overtakes that have gone badly wrong have you seen there? A lot. And if the, and I'm pretty sure a couple of those have gone into the harbour before because of the lack of safety if you go back far enough. So
no, again, usually it's coming out of the chicane. There. That's why they put the chicane.
Well, yeah, usually. But I'm saying there's another perfect
opportunity there. The two times that there. It's happened.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
Always a third.
It's fine. There's always, yeah, and Ocon's giving it a good go. And I, and it's quite telling that his, I forget, Famine was having a right go at him, and I'm not too surprised, and I'm very intrigued about what the punishment's going to be. Personally, I'd like to see doing in at Canada just to see what would happen. And I think he's kind of talked himself out of a Mercedes seat or anywhere else for that matter in the near future at the very least, because until you learn not to take your own teammate out when you're struggling, who's going to want to sign you up? Because everyone's going to be like, no. If you've got Russell or someone, if you've not got a brand new team, essentially, if you've got someone who's been there for more than a year who has a bit of a say in, do you mind if this driver comes in? Well, he's got a bit of a history of driving into me or whoever he's with. No, thank you. So I think for a driver with that much experience and who fought so hard to get here, he'd be a little bit more sensible.
I mean,
and the fact that he achieved literally nothing by doing all of this. He just fucked his own race, screwed Gasly over a bit in the process, and they didn't get any points anyway, I don't think, did they?
Gasly got one point.
Yeah. Oh, 1 point. He started higher up. He could have had a few more. So compromised the team in the process.
Gasly finished exactly where he started, which was 10.
Oh, did he?
Therefore, he got 10th. The one point that he could have possibly gotten. They didn't ruin it.
We
didn't help.
10th and 11th.
10th and 11th. So you've got to think just one person in the top 10, not your teammate, could, you know, have a mechanical failure.
I stress that so much.
Or something in the race. You know, something could have happened where one of those people came out of the race. You've then got two Alpines in the points.
Well, again, potentially signs at that point in time. You're thinking, hey, we're sorted.
Okay. Well, with that aired, I think it's time for a bit of BBC balance. And I think this
and
is...
And we've mentioned balance as a word. Now we can move on.
I think this is a little unfair on Ocon. He's out-qualified Gasly 7 times 3 and finished races in the same ratio.
And the one time he doesn't, he fucks him over.
Gasly has been wheel-banging with... If you watch the race back, Gasly was wheel-banging with Ocon since Mirabeau-Ut. So basically going into... Before you even get to the hairpin, Gasly is slamming into Ocon because Ocon has got a run out on him up the hill through Casino and has been closing in on him. He's been trying to get...
So what we're learning there is go tit-for-tat and let's not be mature and sensible. Let's just go fully mature and drive into him instead.
If you've not got the pace off the start, you've got to, you've either got...
If he had two choices. If Ocon had the pace off the start, he'd have got past him.
Yeah, but he had clearly more of the pace. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been that close alongside Gasly.
Didn't you just use the opposite argument for Perez and Magnussen?
No, I argued that with Perez and Magnussen, Perez shouldn't have just closed the door on Magnussen into a wall. It's a bit different than simply you should have just overtaken. But when you look at it overall, going into and also coming out of the weekend, Ocon is tied with points on tied on points with Magnussen, both on one, and had a chance to pass him in the standings and get after Bottas points wise. If it it wasn't wise for the team game. I'm not refuting that, but I can see what he was going for. If the boot was on the other foot, I will say, we'd just say that Gasly was racing hard and wanted to get a point on the board well. And there does seem to be a bit of a strange prejudice against Ocon for this sort of thing, that he's not allowed to race
against
hard.
Against his teammates. But
how many times has that happened with him and his teammate versus him and other drivers? We always seem to focus on
it
with
about
teammates.
Other drivers, though, is it?
No, but when you think about times that drivers have crashed, you always think about the big ones where they've crashed with their teammates. You always think about Hamilton, Rosberg at Spain, because iconic crash. You don't think about when they've crashed into someone else. You always think about Multi 21 with Seb and his driver, because your closest competitor is your teammate. You think of the crashes and the accidents with the closest competitor. So Ocon is always put under the microscope. He's always raced for midfield teams where the closest person on track to you is likely going to be your teammate. Statistically, it's more likely to happen. It's unfairly weighted, and all of a sudden people just go, oh, it's Ocon, he's going to crash into his teammate. You sort of wipe him off for that.
But there's a higher proportion of Ocon and teammate fighting, especially more so now with Gasly, because...
But is there with Gasly? Is there? We've seen
Alonso and Perez.
Every race.
Yeah, because they're racing together in tractors. So they're the only two drivers in 19th and 20th. The only person he's got near him on track to race against is his teammate. This is the argument. He's only ever near his teammate because he's always in a shit car. So he's always in the same place as said teammates. The only person he's got to race is his teammate. So the only person he's going to crash into is his teammate. I know, I've been out in the sun as well. Hence the reason I'm going a bit red. But there's a strange prejudice against Ocon for this at the moment. If you look back through all of the shunts...
It's not a strange prejudice. You look at how he behaves when he was with Perez and behaved when he was with Alonso, and the amount of drama he's had with that, and the amount of drama he's had with Alonso since he's
got drama he's had with Alonso
him.
Since, but he's not been a personal one. They've both known it to be just hard racing.
Oh, I know.
To want to penalize
hard racing is perfectly fine. Just don't crash into the guy. That's all I'm saying.
Give him this horrendous track record. But
he's not a great one.
It's not a great track record, arguably, but we've given him a worse one. You go back, right, the last big race-ending shunt was the fuckery of Australia 23, which in itself was chaos. Go back through his DNF since. Texas, Piastri wipes him out, trying to go around the outside of him, wipes out his floor. Monza, Russell tries to send one around the outside, wipes out Ocon's steering. Ocon has retired, he's got broken steering. Hungary, Zhou rear-ends Daniel Ricciardo, sending him into the back of Ocon and then into Gasly. So that's not Ocon on his teammate. That's Ocon being crashed into
Nobody said it was Ocon on his teammate. And then you're just saying, look at all these times it wasn't him and no one blamed him for these incidents. Yeah, we didn't say any of those were his fault.
Renault can't build an engine. And then even on Australia, it's decreed no fault. People just don't like Ocon. Say that with your chest. I'm fine with that. Just don't blame him, his racing, for things you'd let other drivers off for.
I wouldn't let other drivers up for that.
No, and I like Ocon. It's just that...
Yeah, he seems like a nice enough guy in the interviews. I don't have anything against him personally, but driving, just calm the fuck down with your teammates. That's all I'm saying.
But it's not specifically because it's his teammate he turns into them.
It comes across a lot like it, though.
Because they're the only other car next to him on track, because he's been in tractors for the past few seasons.
But then when you look at all other teammates that are close to each other, like when, you look at...
They don't crash into each other.
At start of last year, when they were at the bottom, they weren't crashing into each other. And it's not necessarily the sort of crash-ending collisions or, when Ocon has DNF'd, it's all the near misses that seem to happen with Ocon. It's almost like... There is always the common denominator, and it's mainly Ocon.
Okay,
fighting.
So Stroll into the back of Alonso, Bahrain 2022, was that when he did that?
That feels like a very cheap and easy goal to score, though, because it's Stroll, and of course that's going to be something you could use. But if you look at any other team with a competent driver in that second seat, it's going to take a little longer.
Well, I mean, you get close with things like Russell Bottas. Like, what the hell was that?
Not teammates, though. Looking at teammates.
No. The argument is that there are situations where you would have smarter, more careful racers not crashing at locations where they shouldn't be doing that. But again, you focus in on it being teammates because they are the closest rivals. So you have the added sort of focus on it, and then you can vilify Ocon for it. I don't get where it comes from. I don't like that it's there. It's annoying and it devalues the effort.
But you've also got to think, we probably look at it more as teammates. Because if he takes out someone else from another team, Alpine only have to pay for what Ocon's damage, and they've still got another driver in the race. If it's teammates and you've taken both drivers out, then neither can get points and you've got two cars to repair.
But in this instance, he only took himself out. So everyone seems to be sort of
crying completely foul.
Yeah, everyone seems to be crying completely foul and sort of
sarcasm.
Flesh from him.
You missed that.
But no, but it is, because everyone's crawling for their pound of flesh from Ocon, despite the fact that all he did was ruin his own race. Gasly made it to the end, scored the point.
Yeah, but it's the frustrating thing with Ocon, of the thing of he doesn't appear to learn on that side of things when it's going against a teammate, as we've seen throughout his career so far, and he's talking himself out of a future in another team in the process.
That's on him to sort out. But at the moment, there seems to be this sort of strange bias for just arguing against him. I think the end result is going to be we watch Drive to Survive and see what's said about it, because the cameras were following him this weekend. Worst weekend for it to happen. The Netflix curse strikes again. Anyway, enough said on Alpine before we run out of time. We'll move into our winners and spinners. And if you want
to say what you want to say,
spinner.
Well, I was just going to say, if they don't have a spare chassis as well, then he must have known that in the back of his mind. And if you even if you're taking yourself out, you don't
have still got to replace your own chassis, don't you?
Yeah,
but they've got 2 weeks to do that for Canada.
Again, that's all right. Then we'll just crash as much as we like, because you know we've still got 2 weeks and we can get it done in that time instead of making it nice and easy for ourselves.
I think you're confusing crashing with simply actually racing hard and trying to make overtakes on a circuit. Or
I'm not the one who crashed into their teammates and took myself out in Monaco.
No, neither am I. But it feels like we're completely vilifying the one guy for actually trying something this weekend. It didn't work.
No, I'm just saying. Well, no, because Kevin tried something that didn't work either.
Yeah,
took his own teammate out of the process.
Winners and spinners, your winner, because we're clearly not going to get anywhere just arguing about this all evening. We can argue about it until my face changes to a third different color this evening, or we can move on. Winners and spinners, Timo, your winner.
Formula One. So it had a very excellent Monaco Grand Prix, and I'm very happy with it.
Good. Ellie May, your winner.
Well, you've got my winner.
Well, you have to pick another one.
Go on, say Gasly for survival.
Why? Why do we have to have a different one? Why can we not be in harmony? Why do we have to be Alpine? And be-
because it gives the listeners something different to hear. Otherwise, it's just sort of you going, yes, I agree.
You could go for the other Leclerc brother on the podium, that he may.
Yeah, Piastri.
Isn't he his brother or son? Leclerc's son, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's related.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you could say Piastri. I mean, I could go Ferrari in general because it... of how well they're now going under Fred Vasseur, and they're not messing up. And I don't want to say any more in case it jinxes. Yeah. And also, yeah, McLaren as well, because they were up there. They were sort of just as solid in both drivers, and I think it brings a sort of hope for the rest of the season.
And my winner, Charles Leclerc, sort of hinted at it early on. I think he had a fantastic race, really put up with the pressure from Piastri behind. Clearly the conversation between he and his new race engineer and the team on the pit wall has been sort of revitalized. His faith in that team has clearly been reborn as well. He's seen the work that Fred's putting in, and there is a team that he is now part of. It's not him and Ferrari, it's him as a part of Ferrari. And that is, for me, the sort of testament, the reason why this weekend worked out the way it did for them and why it was quite successful.
I did think it was sort of a shame that it wasn't with Savvy.
I don't think it was. I think it's all the more sweet for him to prove that...
They dropped the dead weight and they've got to win with that.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the arguments and the disagreements they had. Meanwhile, Charlotte's going, do you want to know the margins I'm working to? And they're going, no, because you'll say it on the radio and the other teams will hear. And he goes, understood. They've got the lighthearted joking that you see with Will and Lando on the radio. That sort of repartee is immediately there and it works. And I like that. Flip side of the coin then, spinners. I promise I won't get annoyed if you say Ocon. I will, but I won't voice it.
In that case, Ocon as well, and Ellie May and I can agree in perfect harmony.
Yeah.
That means you won't be able to say anything nasty about State Kick Alfa Romeo Sauber-Audi.
That's all right. There's nothing to say about them at all.
Very true. So you joint on Ocon?
Yeah.
Go on, I'll dive into my notes then on why Perez is my spinner. I mean, every week since Miami, he's now fallen down the standings order. He's now got an average qualifying of 5.5 and an average finish of 5.2. Max, meanwhile, is on 1.8 for qualifying and 3.8 for finishes. Miami, Monaco, and a retirement in Australia really hurting Max's finishing there. It should really be ones across the board for him. But otherwise, it's not too bad. It's not too bad for Max, and it's looking pretty dire for Perez, really. And I think he's got to start turning things around. Otherwise, he's going to start sliding even further. I mean, who's next up after him in the points?
Piastri. Piastri's on about 71, 75 points, and Perez is a bit ahead of him in the hundreds, but Piastri's coming.
Perez on 107 and Sainz 93. That was that was last week. Perez 107. Sainz has overtaken now to 108. So yeah, 71. It's Piastri. But I mean, we start seeing more podiums from Piastri, that gap's gonna close in no time. So
maybe Perez will move to Alpine.
What, so he can start fighting Ocon again?
No, he'll replace Ocon, obviously. Why would you keep him after all of this?
They're French. They're never going to make a straightforward decision. Anyway, we'll jump into our predictions review. And 2 points for LMA this weekend, 3 points for my girlfriend who put some into the spare space in the spreadsheet. LMA and Georgia both getting Leclerc pole points. Georgia for the win, LMA for the second. 1 point for Georgia then as her world prediction of Alpine points. Just very narrowly. Ocon was trying to get that one to not come true, but oh well. Also means that the guest slot on the race-by-race predictions has now overtaken me as well. So well done to my girlfriend on that one, ruining my weekend. LMA currently on 16, guest 10, me 9, Timo 1. Doing well.
Where's my one come from?
That is a very good question.
Later.
Saudi Grand Prix, Perez second.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, oh. I know. The one good thing Perez has done this season.
It's the last time he's been on the podium.
Maybe. Anyway, Fantasy F1 review for Monaco. Take a stroll, 177 points. Me with Midbeds Racing. Let's go, 174. What's the racing point? 151. And Ellie May's pod team, 150. On the curbs, P6. Pub chats, P10. Justica para Carlos, P14. Timo's podcast team, P17. My podcast team, 28. Ahead of Extra Magnifico Terrestrial, P29. With Lecresse in P37 with minus 90 points. We had teams scoring in the negative this week. Lecresse had all of Haas, Sargeant, Alonso, and Red Bull and Verstappen. So not a great one when it comes to bagging points. Overall, Take a Stroll currently leads 1,901 points. Noah Honga, 3, 1,878 points. And What's the Racing Point on 1,865. LMA's pod team in P12, JB Racing, P13. Team Nitro RX, P17. The Greatest Moustache, P37, with 759 points.
You know, is it Toy Story 3? When Buzz Lightyear's settings go awry and he starts speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
You sounded a bit like that when saying Justica para Carlos. It was like your settings went a bit weird for a minute.
I have
a
very good Spanish accent, and we won't delve into what I was about to say in the second half of that sentence. Conclusion. That's all we've really got time for on this week's episode. It has been a celebration of Formula One and a very big argument around Esteban Ocon. I'm sorry. You're welcome. In the meantime, where can the people find the rest of you? Timo.
This week, Is It Fast? So I've got an interview out there with Anna Inatsume, Japanese driver racing in Formula Regional Japan this year, so go and check that out.
Fantastic. Ellie May, where can people find more of you?
On my Instagram, hopefully. I will be putting pictures up of my weekend at Masters Historic, where there was more F1, 80s F1 racing, where a Williams took out a McLaren. Sad times.
Something that we might see happen this year. We'll wait and see. And if you want more of me, you can pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly and give that a read. That's always worth doing. And you can find me on social media as @JesseOnCars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. I do feel like there's usually something else we put into the conclusion of this. We'll be back with a preview of the Canadian Grand Prix. There's also going to be a F3 review. We're going to look back on their first few races of the year. We're actually about to go and record that one now. So that's why we've sort of cannonballed our way through this one. If you do have any thoughts on Esteban Ocon, leave them in the comments section. Regardless, if they're good, I'll uptick them. If they're bad, I will probably try and find a way of deleting them or shout at you in the comments. So have fun with that one, and we'll be back to preview the Canadian Grand Prix with more F1 action. Also, completely missed mentioning the Indy 500 somehow.
Yeah, it's because it's not about that. It's about Monaco. No.
All the Coca-Cola 600. Did you stay up and watch that?
No.
I was going to say, you're usually back in.
I was asleep at that point. 1 a.m. Indy 500 finished, so I was going to sleep.
I'd fallen asleep watching the Indy 500. It was great, but I was just very tired. Anyway, we'll be back for Canada more soon.